And as I said, I'm an old radio guy, so I always like to count things down going to a broadcast. So the show begins in 3, 2, 1.
Comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds United. I know what you're thinking. Holy cow. The Ice Age has come. The apocalypse, it's on the way. Trust me, that's what we're going to talk about in this episode. But three shows new in as many weeks, hell hath frozen over. But that's just because April seems to be a busy time, and I got to throw a line of gratitude out to Anthony Mathenia, of course, of Stash Publishing and frequent guest here on the show for in introducing me to my guest this week. And we're going to talk about a comic that, yes, it is on Kickstarter, but I'm not going to sell you. I don't think I'm going to have to sell you on this. I think you're going to hear about it. You're going to go to the Kickstarter. You're going to see that it's funded, and you might even throw them, you know, $10, $11. I say 11. It's an odd number. Yes, it is. You'll find out why. But very excited to bring my guest at this time, Chris. And I'm already forgot how to pronounce your last name, Reichert.
You got it.
I got it. All right. See, that's probably why I didn't have as much luck selling cars, because I can never remember people's names. So, Chris, welcome to Nerds United, man.
Thanks for having me.
So, again, as I mentioned, this is a connection that Anthony Mathenia brought my way, because you just went on Facebook and you said, hey, any podcasters out there want to talk about my comic book? And I'm a podcaster, and I like talking about comic books, and especially indie work and up-and-coming creators. That's, you know, where I... How do I put this bluntly? It's where I get my jollies. I mean, not in any, you know, perverse way, but, you know, it's what I enjoy. So before we talk about your book, Angels of Hell, number one, I just want to get to know you, man. Where are you from? I know in you know, conversating with you a little bit back and forth in text message form, I know you live south of St. Louis, Missouri right now, but is that where you're from your whole life? I mean, have you spent... all of your days in the St. Louis metro area?
Yeah, I can't claim that. I actually, I was born in Tennessee, but that lasted like a couple of months. And actually, my family moved to St. Louis. It's where my mom was from. Started off living in South St. Louis. Then when I hit school age, we moved out to High Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was until I graduated high school, went into the Army. And from then on, basically, I was stationed in Texas and spent 3 years deployed to Iraq. After getting out of the Army, spent a couple more years in Texas. Now I'm right back in the greater St. Louis metropolitan area.
And it's crazy because, and you'll be familiar with this, a lot of people listening don't know when I say that I'm in Belleville right now, that doesn't mean anything to them. I could be in Timbuktu, which is a real place, by the way. But I was born in Belleville back in 82, and like you, you know, we moved away. I moved even further, and then life as it does kind of brings you back. So I can't say that Belleville will be my forever home, but it's my home right now. And hey, we got a new Hofbrau house, so that's exciting. I haven't been there yet. I hear that it's a 2-hour wait, but anybody who likes Bavarian style ales and beers and food should get in line after me, I guess. I don't know. So you said you spent some time in the Army. How long were you in the Army?
8 years and 8 months.
8 years and 8 months. Well, you know, aside from everything that's going on in the world right now, I do always take time to thank veterans. So I thank you, sir, for your service, and look forward to getting to know you. At what point were you, you know, kind of in awe by the comic book figures, the characters on the page?
Well, to be honest, the whole history behind Angels of Hell, yeah, I got a little mouthful going there, was actually started as a poem I wrote in high school for English class, junior year. So that was a decade and a half ago at this point.
What?
And
you even go ahead. Go ahead.
Over the years, I probably wrote about a dozen poems, but the idea to make it a comic first came about during my second deployment to Iraq. It was, MySpace was huge, doing web comics was huge, and I had a buddy in the Army that could draw, and we were going to make a web comic and post it to MySpace. That was the earliest rendition of this in its current form, but it didn't last very long, because not long after that, the poems were initially titled Hell's Angels. That's what the webcomic was going to be. And I was informed that there's a certain motorcycle club that has a copyright to everything Hell's Angels.
The funny thing about that is that it took you until, you know, you were out of high school and deployed over, you know, overseas to realize it. Cause I mean, it's, they're not new. So
yeah. Yeah. Never put two and two together that, hey, the motorcycle club owns it for literally everything.
Right.
And then doing research after that, found out that even Marvel had a Hell Angel comic that got put down because of them. And yeah, that was a big off-putting thing for a little bit there. And
I do.
We could have just changed the name then like it is now, but as good of friends as me and my buddy were, we just couldn't get the character designs right, couldn't get it just nailed down. So it ended up getting shelved, maybe a couple more poems written since then. Then a couple years after I got out of the Army, in about 2014, I hooked up with one of my other Army buddies online. It's like, hey, we're both in the comics. Let's try this. He had an idea that he had that I liked. I had an idea that he liked, and we were going to try working on both. But as things tend to happen, life gets in the way, and it fell apart because life.
Yeah,
there really
absolutely
is no other word for that.
So you mentioned that you were into comics. When did you first kind of get into comics? And being from the St. Louis area, I'm sure you probably had saw especially in your youth, maybe saw more of them in drugstores and in grocery stores than, you know, actual set-aside comic book stores at that time. So when did you start originally getting into comic books?
Oh, it was definitely a young age.
Yeah.
Living in High Ridge, we had a drugstore up the street that, you know, I got a couple of the Archie-published Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Adventures. Loving Ninja Turtles as a kid, I think most of us did.
I was going to say, yeah, a lot of us did.
And then as I got a little older to like 10, 12, got really into X-Men. Always loved the X-Men cartoon show. Then I got into like everything comics that was X-Men. Then somewhere in the teens, like a lot of us do, my love of comics tapered off. Even though I still liked cartoons, and I never actually grew out of that. Never grew up in that sense. But probably spent a good 8 to 10 years not touching a comic, and it was that second deployment to Iraq where I was bored, and we have this money that we're not spending on bills, and did get internet access. You got a Amazon over there.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up buying like all of the Civil War trades that came out from Marvel.
Wow, yeah.
And that's what pulled me back into comics.
That by itself was a, if you look at the original actual, you know, Civil War series, it's brilliant. And then all the tie-ins, and I think I've got most of the trade tie-ins as well. There might be a couple that I'm missing, but I mean that's a vast story all by itself. But one that you can really, you know, sink your teeth into and really enjoy. I was like you as well. You know, I had a few comics, like you said, you know, Ninja Turtles, whatnot, the Ninja Turtle Adventures, because obviously the original Turtles were a lot different than our, you know, cartoon offerings. But yeah, the X-Men cartoon was kind of my entryway. And then there was a Spider-Man cartoon that was, you know, really fun to watch as well. And I think a lot of people forget that even Iron Man had a cartoon and Fantastic Four had a cartoon. and of course, Batman the Animated Series. For me, a lot of the comics that I would read as a kid, the entryway was the cartoon, and just like you, and probably most of us, there was at one point that, for lack of a better term, the comics were shelved, and what was replacing them was, at least for me anyway, I speak only for myself, the attempt at girls. That's all it was. It was an attempt. I didn't really pick up comics again until after I found my lady and we got married, and it was Free Comic Book Day 2009, and it was Geoff Johns, the Black Lantern.
Blackest Night.
Blackest Night. Yeah, thank you. You'd think I would know that one a little bit better if it's the story that brought me back to comics, but my mind went to crap there. So that's what brought me back into comics, and I've got more comics now than I have time to read, especially with the 2-year-old running around. But yeah, it's amazing how comic fans. Different walks of life, different paths that we all have a kind of an eerily similar story. You know, there's some comics, there's some cartoons, there's nothing for a little while, and then we find it again as adults. So,
yeah, that's how it seems. I've also noticed listening to podcasts, talking to the community, because the indie comics fans and creators in general, it's got a lot of tight-knit groups in it. A lot of the history with them is very similar to me, that they loved the Marvel characters more, but DC put out better stories, is what it seemed like.
That's something that I in my last episode with Tom Skoll. Anybody who hasn't checked that out, it's just an episode ahead of this one. That's exactly what he was saying. Loved exactly what you said. Loved the Marvel characters more, but thought that DC when you looked at it, DC had more memorable stories. And especially a lot of that, I think, falls to Batman, and because Batman's such a fun character to write, and because of that, I think a lot of writers relish putting out something new and different, and so that's why Batman himself has had a lot of memorable stories. And I don't subscribe, Chris, to the theory that Batman's the end all be all of superheroes. He's fun to read and. Obviously successful, at the box office more times than not, but still not my favorite. But I respect the creators who put something out there that's unique.
He's definitely one of my go-tos when it comes to the mainstream comics. It's either, I still follow the Injustice storyline written by Tom Taylor right now that ties in with the video games by NetherRealm, and that's just been crazy awesome ever since the first game and the first series came out.
And I do like those alternate takes on characters. One of my favorites is Batman's Red Son, or not Batman, Superman's Red Son. And that's just, it's definitely, because a lot of times, people think of Superman and they think, he's, Smallville, Kansas and Metropolis, he's truth, justice, and the American way. So what happens if his shuttle lands in Soviet Russia? He's going to be completely different. So that was a really fun read for me. Like you said, a little alternate version. So
yeah, it's like a whole nature versus nurture dichotomy there.
Exactly.
Yeah, just growing up in a different place, different scenario, you're going to be a different person.
What have you been reading as of late? Now that you're out of the army and what, when you go to the comic book store, do you have a pull list? You're in close enough to me. Do you have a comic book store? Do you have a go-to that, store that you want to pump a little sunshine and tell folks about?
Yeah, you just said that and I caught a blank on the comic book shop's name. I'll come back to the comic book shop itself. I think it's St. Louis Comics Headquarters, but the names aren't always sticking in my head.
Right.
But my pull list includes Injustice 2 and Batman Beyond, because I've always had a thing for that world after the cartoon coming out when I was a kid. I'll go into certain events like the Dark Knights Metal that just happened, or Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe. And definitely Doomsday Clock, because I've always been a Watchmen fan. And having everything mixed with the mainstream DC Universe is just... always thought it would be a crazy story to tell, and it's been a good ride so far.
That's one that, as I mentioned, I've got a lot of comics and not as much time to read them, but I'm trying to be better, Chris, and working on that. And so I have Doomsday Clock, you know, what's out there so far, but I haven't taken the time to sit down and read it yet. Same with Metal. I joke that I'm so far on behind on my pulls that I'm not even to DC's Rebirth yet. I got some catching up to do.
Yeah. It happens. It happens. As like I said earlier, life gets in the way.
It does. It does. And for all the best reasons. If there were 30 hours in the day, I'd probably spend the other six doing laundry and dishes like I do now. So so you are – let's walk through Angels of Hell. By the way, I'm intrigued when you said that, you know, Marvel had – a character named Hell's Angel that got shot down by the you know Legendary Motorcycle Club. I wonder if that's a character that they turned into Ghost Rider, because I mean, and you've done probably more research on this, you know, in the name and everything than I have. So I just didn't know if you could tell me if that, because if you look at Ghost Rider's, you know, obviously he was out, you know, kind of leather jacket motorcycle. I wonder if Marvel drew some parallels there and.
No, this was a post-Ghost Rider. This was in that big 90s fad boom of everything's got to be badass,
okay,
fires, guns blazing type.
Well, see, I learned something, and that's why we have the show. so you are, I guess, going back to what you said, this the outline and sort of the beginning of this book even predates your time in the Army. So you're in high school. And writing these poems, were you writing poems for a class, or have you just kind of always enjoyed, you know, creative writing?
Well, the first poem was for class, but it just liked the idea of it and started going off from there. I always liked stories like Dante's Inferno and Iliad, the epic poems that are just great stories that are great conflict, but have the imagery of gods and heaven and hell and all these other things that just stand in the protagonist's path.
When you mentioned you know Dante's Inferno, another one, and these epic poems, another one that pops into my mind was John Milton's Paradise Lost. And those were, you know, I didn't even get to those until college, you know, and I had to read them for college, but you know, never were on my radar any younger than that. Is there with the interest in heaven and hell? Is there if you don't mind me asking, your religious background that might play into you know the genesis of these stories?
Well, I mean, my actual religious background has changed a lot throughout the years. Sure. I identify as agnostic now, but I was raised Catholic. And, I don't know, it's just one of those, the story doesn't follow the religious stories to a T. It's a retelling in my own words, as man's words can be misconstrued, and as we've seen throughout history that man has used religion to, you know, control people and see things, do things bad way. Look at, like, all these, what are they called? The guys on TV that are sitting there making millions of dollars off of people, living in mansions.
Televangelist, yeah.
That one, speaking the words of God, but they're not putting anything out to the people. The idea of church could be good and religion could be good if it's being used to actually help the people, but it's more often than not you see the bad that comes out of it these days.
And I'm absolutely not arguing that. I like you, was raised Catholic and still am. I see the dangers out there, and you know, a lot of people like to use the word sheep, you know, like, oh, you're such a sheep if you follow, you know, this blindly, and you know, be it a politician or religious figure, things like that. So you know, I completely, you know, understand where you're coming from. Was it these questions that you had in high school that you know, helped to form these poems then?
Well, that was just a love for the gothic tales and stuff like that, right, including movies like End of Days with Arnold Schwarzenegger, yeah, all these end of the world type scenario type things.
End of Days is one that of his that I think gets forgotten. But he's essentially, if I remember correctly, like I said, I just said it seems to be forgotten. I used to have it, and I think I don't anymore. But it's been years since I've seen it. But wasn't he battling like a satanic figure, like, you know, Satan on Earth or something like that in that movie?
Yeah. That's what was going on. Like, the devil got to come to Earth on New Year's Eve, and he had to try to knock up a chick to basically make the Antichrist on Earth, and Schwarzenegger was fighting that.
Always a nice holiday movie, you know. we're so rich in the seasons, and here comes the devil trying to, you know, bring down humanity. It's funny because, you know, I mentioned Paradise Lost earlier, and in that class we had to take a figure from Paradise Lost, and for anybody who doesn't know, John Milton was the author of this, the writer of this. I can't remember what century it was in, but it was an epic poem about the fall of the angels, you know, leading to, you know, from, you know, Lucifer, the morning star, and all of them falling from heaven. And I remember vividly they said that, you know, the fall from heaven to hell was like 100 times the furthest distance you could ever fathom. You know, some great
just
distance.
Some insane, yeah, like, and blowing it up out of proportions,
right? And idea. And what the assignment was we were supposed to take a character from the book and, you know, write a paper about that character, you know, 3 to 4 pages, whatever it ended up being, and you know, just analyzing the character. And I approached the instructor, went after he assigned us, I said, "Can I have your permission to do something a little different on this?" And he kind of like raises an eyebrow. He's like, "What?" I said, "Can I do something a little creative with this writing assignment?" And instead, you know, I said, "I'd like to analyze Lucifer, but I kind of want to do it as, you know, like a letter from Satan, from the devil to humanity." And he's like, "Okay, but be careful." So what I pulled, you know, obviously I used the text, but I also used some of the text from Dante's Inferno. I used movie quotes from The Devil's Advocate and Dogma, of all, you know, things, and pulled it all together, and it worked. And I got you know, stellar marks on it. But you know, it was just, wanted to do something different. So I, taking a different, you know, text on, you know, a different viewpoint of it, but like The Devil's Advocate is another one, you know, that, I mean, Keanu Reeves and Christ, I can't remember his name now.
I know who you're talking about. I can't. Was it Al Pacino?
Thank you.
That is it, right?
That's it. And in what I remember, her first acting appearance as Charlize Theron as well. Keanu Reeves' wife. But that was another one of, you know, Pacino was trying to corrupt Keanu Reeves, and in fact was his father that Reeves didn't know about. So anyway, that's another one that was, you know, trying to bring about the end of the world through, you know, legal means. But you know, just little twists like that that involve heaven and hell, angels and demons, things like that. The show Supernatural, Chris, did you ever get into that one?
I did not. I've seen a few episodes here or there, but I can't say that I jumped on like so many people did.
I tell you what, and how this show has lasted as long as it did, I'll never understand. I mean, they have, I think they've actually jumped a shark on this show. But it, they have a, you know, of course, bulk of the early seasons was about hunting demons, and then, you know, they do introduce Satan and you know, God, I think, it got very convoluted. That's when I got lost and kind of fell out. But you know, like I said, just boiling down, before we ever had our conversation that we're having right now, obviously, because it's in the past, like I said, I did hop onto Kickstarter last night and look at the artwork and the pages that were available, look at the pledge tiers, and I did. I'm like, you know, this thing may be funded already, but damn, I want to get in. I want to hold this book. I want to read this book. So that's just my appreciation of the subject matter. And that's why I want to kind of talk about it is Angels of Hell. It is on Kickstarter right now, and you can just go to Kickstarter.com, folks, and type in Angels of Hell. It is, I guess, subheading would be an apocalyptic tale featuring the Four Horsemen. Going back to what we were talking about earlier with the X-Men, and particularly the X-Men cartoon, that's my first actual introduction or memory of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, with Apocalypse and Archangel.
Yes.
And you know, their minions. But the Four Horsemen, I guess historically or biblically, would be war, pestilence, famine, and death, correct?
There's different translations, but generally that's what I went with.
Okay. So let's talk about let's get into now the nuts and bolts, if you will, of Angels of Hell, number one. By the way, just the such a striking image. You were the main writer on the story?
I am.
So who's credited with the art? Because just again, having seen more than having read, this person's got a future.
Oh, Carly Ingracia is doing the pencils, and almost all the detail is there before Vincent Alcantara gets there with the inks. And they're both a couple of good guys out from the Philippines. But then afterwards, the thing that pops it all off is Davy Komodo coming in with the colors. He's done a couple things for some of the bigger indie guys like Dark Horse and such. And I mean, it all came together so beautifully. I couldn't ask better from a better art team.
No, it really did. And it's something that if somebody is, you know, has never seen it, never heard of it, and it was sitting on a, you know, a spinner rack or on the shelf of a comic book store somewhere, it's the type of art that will get somebody's attention.
I agree wholly. Like I said, I couldn't have asked for better. They've surpassed any expectation I had. Just searching like Reddit and Facebook for people on the indie market, someone that would be moderately affordable to get art done. And you see some indie work and great story. The art is, it could use a little bit more shine to it. And then you got other ones that you get them in. They got great art, but the story could have been a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that I could somehow manage to take the best parts from both of those with this story, since they got all that art. Man, I hope I live up to it so much with the words.
And it is important for people to know that this is your like debut venture in comic book making, and as you know, we talked about earlier, it's something that started, you know, a few years ago, and as it does, life gets in the way. So what finally allowed you to, you know, sit down and finish, you know, getting the script or getting the outline and you know, start taking that next step?
Well, I started looking on like the Reddit groups for comic books, like comic book collabs and whatever. And I just was getting stuff on Kickstarter for the last few years. Man, if I don't light this fire under my ass right now, it won't happen.
Sure.
So that was basically it right there.
Sometimes it can be, you know, a spark. And I say it can be a spark as I'm looking at the picture, the main picture of your Kickstarter video, and there's like just fire behind your four main characters here. So the spark lights the fire, and now we get this beautiful finished product. And like I said, it's something I'm super excited to read. So I'm glad Anthony brought it to my attention, not just for the interview aspect and the conversation that we're having, but you know, that Anthony, I think he knows me pretty good by now. He knows what you know, lights my fire, so to speak. So it is Angels of Hell, an apocalyptic tale featuring the Four Horsemen. And if we go back to those poems in high school, were you, even though you didn't know that, you know, X amount of years later you'd be writing a comic book, but were these characters present in some of that early poetry or in some of the works that you were doing sitting around in the Army?
Yes, actually. It just started off with them being the Four Horsemen, just general idea for them. But as I wrote more and more over the years, I ended up fleshing them out, making them more what they are now. I mean, it just... Sometimes the idea has got to start at the very basic roots, and then it just grows into the giant tree that it is.
Yeah, and as we look at... what I always try to do with people who are, you know, on the show, talking about Kickstarter, I'm trying to sell the book, but without, you know, I want to talk about the book without giving a spoiler. So, in a spoiler free manner, when we get to the plot, what is this book about?
Well, this book takes place a few months after the apocalypse happened. The Four Horsemen, they led Hell's armies. The world is wrecked, but there are instances, it will be hit on later on in a story, that if you've managed to, before it got shut down, saw like poetry.com, something like that, there are bare bones ideas out there that you could see what was going on. They switched over to basically having their souls unlocked again, because they were all human before they were Four Horsemen.
Okay.
And they decided to start atoning by finding the last living descendant of Jesus, and that would be the one person that can help rally the last of humanity against demons and angels and everyone that's fighting on what is essentially their home.
Aspect of that, when you said unlock their humanity, part of that, you know, just brings back to me, you know, what we talked about with X-Men and Apocalypse and Archangel, because, you know, in Marvel canon and X-Men canon, Warren Worthington III was just Angel for years and then kind of got corrupted by Apocalypse, became Archangel, and then over time found his way back, I don't know if humanity is the right word, but, you know, it kind of reverted back to that. So that I draw parallels from that and this and the added aspect of, you know, the last descendant, you know, last living descendant of, you know, Jesus is, I mean, that's kind of a game changer, because just a few years ago, there was the wildly popular but also kind of controversial, that's what I'm looking for, book by Dan Brown called The Da Vinci Code, which as a novel, you know, pointed to, you know, a notion that, you know, Jesus, the biblical figure Jesus, had a child, and there was a blood lineage down to modern times. So, is that? I mean, where did you get the idea to, you know, bring in a character like a game changer, as I said, who is a blood descendant of Jesus Christ?
Well, like you brought up with the Da Vinci Code, but that's not even the first time that's happened. You know, even like you said, you used dogma for example, earlier for your project in college. It's an ongoing idea that's happened. And, you know, people in their religion, they want to see Jesus as this perfect, immaculate person, but he was still human, even as the Son of Christ in religion, or the Son of God in religion, he was still human. So there's still human mistakes that could have been made, not recorded anywhere in history. I mean, it's all possible.
And so that's, I don't know, I'll say theory, but, you know, that that possibility is the basis of your utilizing, you know, that notion in your story. Like I said, as a Catholic, I'm not offended by it, just like I wasn't offended by the Da Vinci Code. It's, you know, I look at it as fiction, so no offense.
It is. It's fiction. It's art.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people that will be angered by it.
Oh, sure.
And I accepted that from the beginning.
Well,
I
mean, and someday there's going to be a day that I have Kevin Smith on this podcast, and I'm going to, I don't know what day it is. It's probably going to be a Tuesday. No, but I'm going to say, you know what? I said I was in high school when Dogma came out, and I didn't even know anything about it. But, you know, guys, you know, who were in, you know, a Catholic youth group that I worked with were very upset. Like, oh, it's the worst thing in the world. But I had no idea. Same with when the Da Vinci Code came out and the U.S. Congress of Bishops came out and denounced it. And I'm like, all the negative hype is like, okay, well, I'm curious, you know. So if people would just shut up about their, you know, their, I don't know, controversy, then it might not sell as many books. But, you know, the Eric Bischoff, and I don't know if you're a wrestling fan, but Eric Bischoff, who used to run WCW back in its heyday in the 90s, wrote a book called Controversy Creates Cash, and he was right. Controversy sells, man, and so it worked for the Da Vinci Code. I mean, that was a New York Times bestseller, and this notion here in Angels of Hell, the whole story, not just the you know, the biblically controversial part, but the whole story itself, you know, urged me to throw my money down. So, yeah, like I said, man, looking forward to reading the story is I'm so pumped. I hope that there's a you know, I hope I get the, I selfishly hope that I get the digital copy before the hard copy comes in, because that's just how intrigued I am by the whole thing. So anyway, back to the plot. The four horsemen, you know, a couple months after the apocalypse, they have kind of regained their, you know, humanity. Their souls have been unlocked, as you said. They go on the quest. What other characters do we find along the way? Because, I mean, in a post-apocalyptic world that doesn't involve zombies, does it?
No, not
okay.
No.
All right, so it's
not yet anyway.
Right, because you can never tell anymore. You throw a zombie in there, and somebody's going to make, you know, $10,000.
There's a grand scheme to it that parts further out still happen. I'm focusing solely on getting this first arc out. But if I do well, and I hope I do well enough that people still want to keep reading,
sure,
and not, you know, want to kill me or anything too much for it. This one focuses solely against going after, or let me clear my thoughts for a second. The main antagonist in this one is the Prince of the Circle of Lust, Asmodeus.
Okay.
And as the stories go on, they're going to end up battling the princes, the rulers of all the circles of hell.
And that would be, according to Dante, 9?
It'll be the 7 primary circles.
Okay.
Like, one of them was, in Dante's Inferno, it was a circle that was split into a couple different.
Sure. And then there was the part of in Dante's Inferno, Purgatory, which doesn't really count, I guess. So,
yeah, there might be something that comes in out of there. Yeah, I'll keep those cards close to the chest,
sure,
for now.
No, I understand. So, say his name again. Asmodeus?
Asmodeus.
Asmodeus.
It's Asmodeus, Asmodeus. It's hard to get the old. I actually went off like the Key of Solomon, demons such as that, and mm-hmm. did research on demons that were related to certain circles of hell in different texts throughout history.
Okay. And I do like that you are incorporating some of those, I guess, traditional names, for lack of a better term, into it. I mean, it's easy to go out there and give anybody, you know, a John Smith type of name. So, props again for, you know, going back and tying in that historical element. our four main characters, our horsemen, let's talk a little bit about them. Again, the artwork provided, there is, all right, this is how I'm going to describe them, and then you come in and tell me, more about them. So left to right, there's the lady, there's the big winged guy, there's the skull man, and painted face. So, in the broadest, and what I do like about these is they look multicultural.
They are indeed multicultural. The lady is actually the personification of death in my story.
Okay.
And she's from literally the time period 0 AD BC, whatever, the time that Christ got crucified. She was there for that.
Okay.
So she's actually Middle Eastern type skin. The big guy with the wings, that is the pestilence representation. He was going to be like the year 1666 in England. That was the year that the London Fire happened, but they still had
the Black Death.
Traces of the Black Plague. Yeah. And that all plays into part of his background. Then next to that, you have the African man in the bunch, and I hope that there wasn't too many stereotypes in it, anything that hurts people culturally on him, but he is from also the mid, close to the same time as Pestilence was. He's Famine, and he's from a region in the Ethiopian region of Africa.
Okay.
And he was actually an Ethiopian king. But it's people that I made up that tribe entirely right there. I didn't want to hit anybody's culture.
And he does. He stands there and he's got a staff and he looks regal, which he looks like of the four. And I'm not, they're probably four, equally invested business partners. But he looks like he could be the leader just by the his positioning there and his stance. And then our gentleman to the right, I'm going to say is of a samurai, perhaps, background.
Yeah. That's actually pretty close. He's, his background was that he was an orphan child during wars in Japan. I was a big fan of Rurouni Kenshin growing up when it came to animes.
Okay.
And his history is going to be, he was in Kyoto during the Kinmon incident, which was, if you watched Rurouni Kenshin, that had the OVAs from when he was younger, the Samurai X. The Kinmon incident was when the fires and battles happened in Kyoto, and that he was one of the most feared assassins is his background, which is why he's war.
Okay. The samurai mask, as well as what looks like a samurai sword sheath and some of those I don't know bamboo or wooden gauntlet forearm pieces were signals to me, markers to me that he was of that I guess lineage or background. So a lot of people will be excited right now that there's not a of your four main protagonists here, not a single one of them is a white American. So, well done.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
And something like that's probably just a something that was done creatively and unconsciously, not even thinking. But in what I've seen in all the people that I talk to it's that cultural diversity is very it's in right now, and I don't say that as a fad or as a trend, but everything is trying to be more inclusive. So they have a checkered past, but they are seeking redemption, so that's I think that's something very, very positive. So I say well done.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. Now, something that will, with one of the other protagonists in there, is the Descendant of Christ. In this one, I let my artist Carly talk me a little further into developing his backstory than I originally had. He's going to be half Palestinian, since if you look historical wise, Jesus wouldn't necessarily be a white male from the region that he was raised in, and this is something that's, you'll see articles and stuff about it, whatever, whatnot. But figured with the political strife in the world right now, making him part Palestinian would make for a bit of intrigue right there.
Yes, I don't disagree. That could potentially be, I don't know, more... What's the word I'm looking for, Chris?
Controversial?
Yeah, we'll go with that. Controversial, more igniting than the notion that, you know, there's a descendant of Christ at all. But, no, hey, you know what? If a goofy comic book, and I don't mean your book is goofy, but if something as goofy as a comic book in general can, you know, potentially bring some people together, I'm all for it, man. This world has seen enough BS, and we need to come together. We need peace. We need to, you know, for our American listeners who understand the reference, we need to reach across the aisle more and shake a hand. So yeah, again, doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't change my excitement level. In fact, probably adds to it a little bit, because that's another. It's so easy for a writer, I think, to, you know, take an easy way out, you know, and be like, well, let's just, you know, name him Jesse, and you know, he's you know, going to be from, I don't know, South Carolina or something like that. I don't know how he crossed the ocean. Probably his ancestors did decades or, you know, centuries ago. But man, you challenged yourself, or your artist Carly, correct?
Yeah, he definitely helped influence that. So my initial idea was to make him more like a John Constantine looking character.
Okay. Now, wait, John Constantine, the Keanu Reeves version, or John Constantine as we all know him to be?
The sandy blonde.
and since you mentioned Constantine, and since we were talking about it, Matt Ryan, who portrayed Constantine on the show on NBC that lasted for a year, and who apparently is going to be a recurring character now on Legends of Tomorrow, I think he is a fantastic John Constantine. And that's no disrespect to Keanu Reeves, but they were swimming out of their depth, I think, with that film version. But I'm a big fan of Matt Ryan's John Constantine, so...
Absolutely. That show was vastly underrated. If they'd have put it on the CW from the get-go instead of Warner Brothers, other NBC, whatever, right, it would probably still be going on right now.
And it would be, I think, challenging a show. And maybe that's why they didn't do it, but I enjoyed it, and we talked about Supernatural. I enjoyed it more than, you know, half of the Supernatural seasons that I, you know, saw when I watched that show regularly. That's going to be a controversial statement right there. But hey, this is the episode of controversy, I guess. We'll have to throw that in the title. No, but like I said, it ups the ante to you as a writer, because you know, now I don't want to use the phrase of taking the easy way out, but not going, you know, you had a plan, and then Carly says, man, you know, and I don't know exactly how that conversation went, but, you know, throws this added wrinkle in, and, you know, now you've got to write it from a different perspective, and it's going to be, it was a little more challenging, I'm sure, but kudos to you, from, you know, the writing aspect, and then, you know, I'm excited to see how it all shapes out. Let's remind the listeners, this is issue one, number one. How long could this story go, in your opinion? Like, how much of the story is in your mind, or at least, you know, outlined on paper? How many issues potentially do you see Angels of Hell going for a complete story to be told?
Well, each arc is going to be its own story, like most big comic companies do, but there will be an overarching story that could be hit. But each story will have its own definite ending right there. Might make you want more. Like, it might leave you really wanting more. But from there, we got, like I said, there's seven circles of hell. Each circle is going to have its own entry point into the world when the apocalypse happened. And they're all going to have to get closed, closed back off. And then there's a lot of things recurring within biblical texts, whatever, whatnot. You got the seven primary archangels that held the seven seals that trumpeted the apocalypse upon, and seven's really a reoccurring number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very.
But then
much
you
so.
Have that. I actually have plans that go beyond that once that happens, but that's way too far in the future to really.
So is issue one? I mean, is one issue the arc, or is it like a 3-issue arc, and then seven of those, or?
Yeah, I plan on doing a 3-issue arc for this right here. Okay. This is just the beginning.
And like I said, and kudos to you and your creative team that have put a comic out there that is not only funded but has exceeded some of your stretch goals as well. As we record this Sunday afternoon, the middle of the month, you still have 17 days to go on the Kickstarter campaign, and you had a very modest $1,000 goal set for it, and you're already at $2,240. Again, I didn't hit refresh because I know what that would do to my internet connection, and I'm just not going to, you know, I just scroll up and down. But you've knocked out some of the stretch goals with $1,500 funded. You got four pages of bonus features added at the $2,000 mark. You got a new print added by Davi Komodo. Did I pronounce that right? Or Komodo?
I'm fairly certain you did. I hope I've been saying that right all the time, all this time. Well, but his last name is actually the first couple letters of his several last names of his, because he's from Brazil.
Oh, okay.
He's got that traditional multi last names of the family going on.
And then the next stretch goal is the $2,500 mark, and that's four more bonus pages added. I don't know if demand is the right word, but there is certainly interest in this book to the point where you've almost met all three of your stretch goals, and that's still with more than half of, you know, the campaign left. So that has to give you plenty of confidence going forward to issues 2 and 3 and knocking out this first arc, correct?
It does. It definitely does. I've watched so many campaigns that set low rewards or even set high funding goals or whatever and had half as many backers as I have right now, which it's currently standing looks like 154. That is very, very flattering. I'm floored. If you've backed, you've read some of the updates, I'm floored every time that I'm posting about it, like the support that's come out for it.
And that has to give you confidence about, you know, going forward with issues 2 and 3. I mean, theoretically, you could fund the entire first arc based on what you're knocking out here in just for issue 1.
Yeah, I wouldn't say all that. I put that modest goal of $1,000 because I want it to get made.
Sure.
This is strictly for covering the printing and shipping fees. If it doesn't raise something like $6,000, which I don't expect it to, that's what it would really take for me to break even on gotcha. This first comic.
And I know, and kudos to you and whoever, you know, handles your or working with you on the Kickstarter, because I love the cost breakdown towards about midway down the page. People don't realize that there is such a high. Like most of the money raised through a lot of these independent, you know, Kickstarter, you know, independent comic campaigns, goes to printing and shipping, and that doesn't leave a whole lot left for the creators, unfortunately. So, good to see that at least you've gotten, you know, as much, you know, of that covered, you know, as possible going forward, because it's not cheap, and you might have to ship internationally, you know, which is an added expense. So just I'm floored by the success that you've seen. And when I looked at this last night, Saturday night, as we're recording, I looked at it, I'm like, wait a minute. They don't need – I don't need to donate. And then I got scrolling down and looking at the story and looking at the art, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to donate. just which one? And that's why I want to, you know, talk about some of these, you know, pledge goals or, you know, donate options for just a dollar. I mean, if you're just like, hey, I appreciate that Greg's talked about this, I'm going to throw him a dollar. Well, you at least get your name in the thank you section at the book. For $3, you get a thank you and a digital copy. So that's really where I'm encouraging my listeners to start. But really, my favorite pledge tier, if you will, is $11. And I mentioned this earlier on, $11, such a random number. But this is what you get. You not only get Angels of Hell, number one digital copy, but you get number one digital copies of five other books. And so you get, for less than $2 each, you get six fantastic independent comics. And all five of these other ones have also had successful Kickstarters. So it's not like, you know, and I say this not to denigrate anybody who's, you know, not had success on Kickstarter, but you're getting books that, you know, have been successful, that people have wanted to read. I opted for the $20. Let's see what it was. What was it? What was it?
So, was it Fulfilling the Prophecy?
I thought so. Yeah. If it was that, apparently it had
the
to be that
one. Comes with the digital pencil and ink files so that you could practice your digital inking and coloring?
Maybe. I thought it was the other one, The First Horseman Enters, but what do I know?
Yeah, the one with the Kickstarter exclusive color, the grayscale of the original cover.
That's what it should be, but currently the screen says zero backers, so I'll have to double check. or maybe it didn't go through, I don't know. Either way, by the end of this weekend, I will verify my Kickstarter goodness, and I may have spoken too soon. I'm pretty sure that I got in on that, but
I also see zero backers right now. So,
all right,
it is right next to that Fulfilling the Prophecy. That could have been it.
We'll double check. I'll double check my email. That's not a complaint against Kickstarter. That's I'm a goofus who. They didn't read things clearly. Either way, I'm not no regrets, as I like to say. We're gonna have some fun. Again, look, folks, look at this artwork. Read the pages that have been shared already graciously to give you an idea of the early moments of the story, and just, you know, support independent comics. That's what we say all the time here on Nerd United. You support indie music. The Weeknd, I have been told recently, has never actually put an album out through a label. He just releases it on YouTube and people buy it up, and he's won a Grammy. I don't even know who The Weeknd is. I just know that, you know, according to Loverboy, everybody's working for The Weeknd. So that's all I can tell you. But indie movies, people love independent movies. People love independent wrestling. So give indie comics a shot. There's great stories out there to be told. There's fantastic artwork, and the two come together in Angels of Hell number one. And I got to thank you, Chris, for taking some time out. I know it's a Sunday afternoon, and as we talked earlier, Sundays are usually quiet time, family time, things like that. But I appreciate you taking an hour or so out to visit with me and talk a little bit about your passion project and the fire that was lit under your ass to get the story done. It's something that I need to do if I'm ever going to get the story in my head out to people. I don't know. The fire's not big enough, or I got a big ass. One of the two. So,
that's no problem at all. I was just catching up on Preacher Season 2 on Hulu today anyway.
Well, I appreciate your time. All that I can say is, are you busy this upcoming weekend?
This upcoming weekend? You know, I don't think I am.
You should. It's not a far drive for you. It's certainly a shorter drive for you than it is for me. Consider going down to Cape Girardeau for the Cape Comic Con. Lou Ferrigno will be there. Reb Brown, who was the TV's version of Captain America back in the 80s, will be there. Plenty of artists, writers. There are some panels. I'm going to be down there on Saturday as well. Lots of good things happening. at Cape Comic-Con this upcoming weekend. It is the, if I'm looking at the dates correctly, 20th, 21st, and 22nd at the Osage Center in Cape Girardeau. Chris, that's a relatively short drive for you, is it not?
It is. Hour and a half, maybe.
See, it's shorter for you than it is for me. So I'll be there. I don't know what your excuse. No, I'm just kidding. but it is a good time. And if you end up heading down there, man, reach out to me. I'll be around.
All righty. I appreciate it.
All right. And again, everybody, you'll see the link on the post for this. You'll also find it on the Nerds United Facebook page. Chris Reichert. I got it right again, didn't I?
You did.
Two for two. Two for two and a half. I was unsure. We'll go two for three. I was unsure both times. And all right. Chris Reichert, appreciate your time and your story. Can't wait to see it on the screen. Hold it in my hands. Angels of Hell, number one, an apocalyptic tale featuring the Four Horsemen. That is it for this episode of Nerds United. And again, big thanks to Chris for joining me, and check out his Kickstarter campaign. Throw $11 their way. You will not regret it, because that's six amazing comics, number one issues digitally. You don't have to go anywhere. They're going to drop them right in your email for less than $2 each. So head over to Kickstarter, search for Angels of Hell, or like I said, just use the links via the social media. And again, appreciation to Chris for joining me on this episode of Nerds United. It's been an busy April, and I'm enjoying it. So we'll catch you next time on Nerds United. Thanks for listening.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.